Hi, I'm Nicole Ferraro, and this is The Divide, a podcast from Light Reading exploring the ongoing digital divide, why and where it still exists, and what needs to be done to get people everywhere connected to reliable, high-speed internet. Today, I am joined by Roger Timmerman, CEO of Utopia Fiber. We discuss the progress Utopia has made in bringing broadband competition to communities in Utah and beyond through its municipal open access model. We also discuss opposition to Utopia Fiber, including a recent anti-municipal broadband advertising campaign, what's really behind all that, how Utopia is responding, and much more. All right, Roger, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me.
Glad to be here. It's always fun to talk broadband.
It sure is, and you do a lot of it, so I'm grateful for your time and that you're willing to talk broadband with me a little bit today. We had you on The Divide back in ye old 2021, and so I'm excited to have you back today to hear a bunch of updates on Utopia. But for anyone who might be unfamiliar with Utopia and who somehow missed our podcast episode 3 years ago, why don't you give us the quick history of how and when you all got started and a bit about how your deployment and service delivery model works?
Okay. Well, we've got a very colorful history. There's a lot of good, some struggles and bad in there too. Things are great today, but it hasn't been easy. This all got started back in about 2002 when cities in Utah felt like they just had really bad broadband and they tried to get incumbent providers to upgrade. We've got a whole bunch of specific stories of, this business left the city. Brigham City had a big anchor business leave the city to go to another city because they'd had broadband outages that took down credit card processing in Chicago that was dependent on this. And I mean, there's all these things that happened. And some of these, you know, the lack of broadband in these communities was just too much. They had to do something, couldn't get the private sector to do anything, even with incentives. It was kind of seen as a last resort and said, well, we're just going to roll up our own sleeves and take care of ourselves and not be subject to lousy broadband. And that's back, 2002. We didn't have Zoom and YouTube and Netflix and all these other things, right? So this was just trying to be functional with some basic data needs, and they couldn't get that met. So 11 cities ultimately signed agreements to create Utopia and backstop bonds. There were some other cities involved, but it came in to just those that backed bonds with sales tax revenues to make it all happen. And then subsidize it was like, well, we'll just use this revenue to borrow money against it. And the idea is that we'd have a whole bunch of customers, we'd have revenues from those customers, it would pay for the debt, and then we'd go do another phase and another phase. And, over so many phases of financing and project build, we'd have a fully built out system. It didn't go so well. Even just the first built out areas, they got sued by Qwest. We had all sorts of problems. It was pretty bleeding edge back then. So there were some internal problems as well as external problems. We had the legislator coming after us because we had lobbyists from the incumbents pushing laws to stop cities from being able to do broadband. It was a mess. But ultimately, those cities knew they wanted better broadband. So they saw it through. We had strong leaders. We were able to do incremental financing, and the cities did end up having to pay on that kind of first phase of the project. Around 2008, 2009 was a turning point where they restructured Utopia and said, hey, this has been a boondoggle in the past, but is there a future for this? And they created a kind of a sister agency to finance growth. And they were able to do a bond and build a network. And we kind of spread that in a couple of the city projects. And it was profitable. And we said, hey, we can show, despite this bad history, it's difficult. We can show that we can actually do this successfully. And if we keep doing that, we can finish this and get all 11 cities built out. And so from that 2008 to current period or a few years ago, we did financings and finished out all of the original cities. So it was 11 cities fully built out. A few years ago, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, some of the other cities were like, you guys aren't done. You don't have the best reputation, but we also need fiber. Can we partner with you somehow? And our reputation wasn't great back then, but we did have some cities partner with us. And so we added Woodland Hills and and then Morgan City, and we were phenomenally successful there. And they're like, I don't know why you guys have such a bad reputation. You know, this is awesome. You know, they didn't have any shortfalls in their projects. They were successful. The residents loved it. They're some of our highest take rate areas. So we kind of lived with both. We're like, yeah, we got some bad history, but you know, a lot of years of success. And then we've just continued to add cities since then. And so now between cities that we kind of own outright under this partnership of cities as a governmental entity still, or city owned independent systems like Idaho Falls, they own theirs, but they partner with us on some aspects of maintaining and operating that network. You know, they use our network engineers and NOC and technical side, but they're kind of the boots on the ground in that city. So a lot of different structures, and we're up to, I think, 23 cities of fiber to the home, with 50 plus cities of fiber kind of in between and for businesses and schools and anchor tenants and other projects. So that's kind of where we're at, mostly in Utah, but a little in Idaho and Montana. It's been a colorful history of lobbying and attacks and fighting. You know, we get asked about this latest campaign. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit, but we've had ones before. We had this Utah Taxpayers Association did a Unopia campaign like 10 years ago or something.
You can't.
And it didn't work. then we've had several attacks from Utah Taxpayers Association over the years. We had an opposition campaign when we were partnering in Bountiful. So that one was targeted specifically at that city. But you know, those residents, people could see right through it. They're like, this is just incumbents trying to keep competition out. It's just this anti-competitive behavior. And then, you know, over this period of time, you think, you know, from 2002 to today, you know, what has changed in broadband, right? Like we used to be talking to people like, you know how slow your dial-up connection is. You could do a lot better than that.
Right. Exactly.
We'll upgrade you to 100 megabit connection. And then, you know, Comcast, these guys, nobody will ever need 100 meg. You know, that's ridiculous. You know, you can't possibly use 100 meg. And, you know, fast forward 5 or 6 years and you're like, you couldn't possibly use a gig. Now today, they're like, you couldn't possibly need 10 gig. And of course, we offer 10 gig residential. Right. And it's the same story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same players, you know, it's, but yeah, things are great. We've, you know, we're up about 63,000 subscribers, or like connections on the network, serving probably closer to like 70,000 or so. There's a lot of bulk connections with apartments and things like that.
So I'm going to come back to the, you know, you mentioned the early history and the ongoing lobbying attacks and such, in just a moment, because I definitely want to chat about that a little bit more. But just talking about your long and rich history with this company, I'm just curious, like, has your model and has the way that you do this evolved over time as you've learned a little bit? Because it sounds like Utopia kind of, you know, was something in the beginning to solve a problem, and it's grown and changed in so many ways, just as you pursue new partnerships, as other cities are like, hey, how do I get in on this? How has it evolved from your vantage point?
It's very different today than it used to be.
Yeah.
The first version of Utopia was just a few like members of the Utopia entity writing checks and overseeing work. And what I mean by that, it was all contracted out to a private company to actually be the operator and builder and oversee all the projects. There was no in-house expertise. It was just, you know, governmental contracting type of thing. Mm-hmm. In that turnaround period, it was like, we're getting screwed. You know, we got to solve this. You know, we fired all these companies and consultants and middlemen and stuff like that, and just said, we're going to in-house this. And I was brought in at that time, and literally like day one was, why are we paying these guys, you know, $200,000 a month for a knock or whatever it was? So we built our own team, and pulled in people who know what they're doing. Right. So we're unique in some ways in that we build our own stuff. We have our own network engineers, our own network operations, our field technicians. We're over about 105 employees now. Whereas, like I said before, that 2008 version was probably like five because everything was outsourced. That made a dramatic impact. We were able to kind of control our own future, you know, up the reliability, up the technical capabilities, save money, be efficient, be able to scale. There's a lot of benefits. And it positioned us to be able to grow to what we are now. So it's different. It's like Utopia is a lot of people and a lot of, you know, you'll see our trucks and see our stuff everywhere. We in-house it.
Yeah. And technically
construction, we still contract out. We still have some really good construction contractors and engineering firms that we work with.
You better hold on to them. they're in demand. Technically you guys are a private company, right? I mean, it's a municipal model. Can you explain?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people think
this one trips me up. Just
private company. No, you're not the only one. So, you know, I say these cities got involved in all of this stuff, but it's more than that. Like, we are literally a governmental entity owned by those cities. So it's a lot like a water district. In some states, they'll call it a joint powers authority. In Utah, they call it an interlocal cooperation, not a corporation. It's like one letter off. We're like, no, not a corporation. A cooperation, meaning cities cooperate with each other under this like joint powers authority type of an entity. They just don't call it JPAs in the Utah code.
Okay.
So yeah, we, you know, people are like, who do you work for? Like, are there owners? Are there, who's in charge? You just get to do whatever you want? And I'm like, no. I have a board of people making up those cities. So those cities appoint, you know, maybe their mayor or a city council member. Sometimes it's a city manager. They get to pick who represents them on the board. But there is a board of representatives from those cities, and they are in charge. Mm-hmm. And then I report to them, and ultimately who owns all of these assets, the public does. So we're publicly owned by these cities and communities. And it changes everything about this, right? Our employees, they're just like, you know, every person that calls us, we're like, that's, you know, we work for them, right? We work for our customers and the businesses and the city entities themselves. So if we're able to like lower our price, you know, that's good news. You know, all the other companies want to raise and, you know, increase profits. And ultimately, if we just can provide more, you know, the best service and to as many people as possible, like obviously we want to pay our bills at the end of the day, and we need a balance. You know, we have bond investors who've bought our debt. We need to make sure that we're going to be in a position to pay those bonds and all that. So we have those types of stakeholders out there, but ultimately we're a community owned, you know, municipal entity, but it's like multi-municipality.
Okay. So okay.
That's who we are.
Thank you for clearing that up. And then the other specification I wanted to ask you about is, are you delivering open access networks everywhere?
Yep. So that makes us pretty unique in the sense that everything that we do is open access. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different definitions. You know, some people are like, how do you carve up open access? And is this model open access and whatever? And I'm like, I think there's a lot of things out there that are actually just, you know, public-private partnerships that are being called open access, where you have a city ownership, but it's still just like one option on the network. I'm like, if there's not multiple options,
right?
There's not choice. It's not, maybe it's open, but not open enough, right? Like open, it needs to be open enough that it would attract multiple competing providers on it.
Yeah.
And if it isn't doing, it's not effectively an open access network, even if there's like, hey, there's this little tiny window in our model that would allow another company to come in. Like,
yeah.
But if it's not operating as a competitive marketplace, it's not really open access.
Sounds like it's getting the sustainability treatment in terms of how it's being used in some corners. Yeah.
So from our perspective, we're like, you got a few options or more on there than you've got a market, like an open access marketplace. Like that's the proof of open access in our senses. It's the idea that you have, you know, one infrastructure and lots of private companies, private or public, right? Just multiple entities who can all share that infrastructure. And obviously that makes things a little more complicated. On the back end, we have to do a lot of work to make sure, you know, customer of this company can't ever interfere with a customer of this company. We run everything as an active system versus a PON system. You know, some people are like, well, you could do it with PON. And I'm like, we could, right? Like it would work. But an active system is just by its nature a dedicated connection for every customer. So we don't even have to worry about it, right? You got a gigabit connection, that's your gigabit connection. There's not any time division or splitting or anything like that. You get a 10 gig connection. You got a 10 gig connection. Your neighbor could be a total bandwidth hog and it's never going to impact your connection because that 10 gig is yours. And then as all those connections aggregate up in our network, we always maintain enormous headroom. So there's never congestion anywhere ever on our system. We don't have to do it that way. But as I'm trying to attract service providers to come on the system, you know, it's a huge benefit to them, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, we know we can come on Utopia and we'll never be sharing bandwidth or be congested because of what's going on from other companies and other customers on the system, because we basically have our own dedicated network within Utopia's network versus sharing it with all this congestion and splitting that happens on a PON network. So anyways, those are a couple of fundamental differences for us. We're open access and we're fully active connections. And we have a lot on there. So we've got 15 residential service providers. You know, in some ways we're like, that's too many. Yeah. So it's you know, a customer comes on and they're like, here's the menu. And they're like, that's a hard decision. You know, from a customer perspective, in some ways, it'd be kind of nice if there was like two or three, because it'd make it easy. But we're open. And like, if we were kicking companies off and really, you know, too restrictive, then we wouldn't be truly open. And that openness has led to, you know, the most competitive marketplace in the country. You know, where else can you go get 15 different companies trying to get your service plus the incumbents, right? So, you know, between CenturyLink, Comcast, and a handful of wireless providers in our market and our 15 providers, like that's what's available to every single household in our footprint, which is more than anywhere else in the country.
Certainly can't say that where I'm sitting in Manhattan. So I was going to ask you then, in terms of the open accessness of it all, do you have a cap for how many providers? You mentioned 15. Is that the maximum number of providers you'll allow on?
No, we just had an RFP because we get for companies coming all the time, and we're like, you know, like we got to balance it. There are some criteria that you have to meet from a financial metrics perspective. Okay. Technical abilities, like there's a vetting process in our RFP for companies to get onboarded. And so we kind of try to push back reasonably because, you know, it wouldn't do anybody good to have a whole bunch of like mom and pop ISPs run out of their basement that are unreliable and don't pay their bills or whatever. So there is at least a minimum bar they have to meet. But we've been surprised how many companies have come in and met that bar, and we don't really have a reason to tell them no.
Yeah.
And so it's okay. It's a little bit of a pain point. It's a pretty good pain point to have, you know, of all the pain points to have. I'm like, oh man, there's too much choice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
At the end of the day, it doesn't prevent people from signing up. It just makes it a little bit more confusing for customers to get on.
Yeah.
And make a choice.
I'm sure those broadband labels will clear everything up. So that's a little sarcasm.
We look at you know, 15 different labels and decipher this. Yeah. I mean, we have a thing that's kind of like, here's some side-by-side. We can't really have any sort of bias towards any of them. We have to be very neutral, but you know, we're like, here's some data sources externally you can look at, like Google ratings and you know, other things. We're looking at other metrics we could use that would be like third party, like rankings or speed test results or something that people could use to vet them. But actually, you know, what we found is probably the most common way people decide is it's some like social media posts, like, like there's all these little local community groups, whether it's your city Facebook group or a Reddit thread or something like that. People are like, hey, I'm thinking about signing up for Utopia. You know, who would you guys think? And which provider should I pick? And that's become super common now that people will post, oh, I've got these guys and they're awesome. Or these guys have a reputation for supporting gamers a little bit better. Or these guys have a modem you can rent, you know, or the Wi-Fi router. And they'll, you know, and so people share their experiences and kind of help each other navigate through that.
Yeah.
And that's been really nice.
Awesome. So let's turn now for a minute to the, you know, you mentioned the lobbying campaigns that we suspect incumbents are likely behind. As you've been talking about basically this whole time, what you guys bring to communities is a level of competition you're not seeing anywhere else. And that helps people, you know, choose their service based on price and their own needs. And that's a different way of addressing the digital divide than, you know, other providers coming into areas and delivering service where it doesn't exist. But your way is definitely and has always ruffled the feathers of incumbent providers. So you mentioned a couple of campaigns. There was, there was an effort in Bountiful City, Utah, like you said, to stop a city council approved network from moving forward. Luckily, that effort failed to basically gather enough signatures to stop the city council approved network from moving forward. So I believe you guys broke ground on that already. But more recently, there was a bigger campaign that was launched, nogovinternet.com, launched by the Domestic Policy Caucus. It's an interesting group of people. And it primarily takes aim at government, you know, municipal internet, but primarily at Utopia. It's notable that they also had a terrible pun, Dystopia. What was the one you said they previously used?
Unopia.
Unopia. Okay. I mean, nothing gets me more annoyed than a bad play on words. So already they're not on my good side. But, you know, we have some reporting on this whole campaign and everything. But basically, they say, you know, the 20-year-old project is $300 million in debt and still hasn't achieved its goals. Of course, you already addressed early issues you guys had with the network and ways that you've set out to deal with it. But so just a couple of questions for you on this whole effort. First of all, how have you had to respond to these campaigns and this most recent one in particular as a business? And two, how do you, Roger, want to respond to their actual claims?
Yeah, so... It's kind of come in waves. You know, the first thing we saw were these radio and TV ads. And it was just like, what in the world is this? You know, like out of the blue, what are they doing? Because the Bountiful thing, that's done. So they're not attacking that. Like, so what are they stopping us from? We're like, there's nothing, there's no vote. There's no specific effort or thing that's happening to oppose. So it seemed to be just kind of wide audience, right? Like TV and radio are not very targeted marketing campaigns. So we're like, well, it's not entirely accurate, but they're just kind of like trying to leverage general paranoia about government stuff. Yeah. And so therefore Utopia is a bad guy, right?
Yeah.
Like the information provided was just a joke. You know, it's, you know, oh, you got to worry about government, you know, government, they're going to throttle you and they can control your speeds. And I'm sitting here thinking, no throttling. We've always been on the side of net neutrality. Nothing's rate limited or throttled ever. And we have the fastest speeds in the country. like those, you want to talk to those specific data points? Let's go talk about throttling and caps and speeds and reliability related to cable providers, right? Like we're on exactly the opposite end of this attack. Like, are you crazy? But, you know, it's not about truth. It's about misinformation, right? They just want to, you know, ooh, spooky government. We're like, guys, we're not the federal government. We're not even the state government. We're your local city government. That's who we are. We're, you know, that's who I report to, like I explained earlier, right? It's if there's something going on in the local city and people aren't bad, you know, they're mad about it, they call their neighbor, you know, the city council member down the street or the mayor. And I get calls from them. That's who I work for. So, this is a local effort. People actually trust their local government. The National League of Cities and Towns is always, National League of Cities is always promoting that idea that like, we're the most trusted level of government, right? Like we have, a lot of trust for our local cities, some trust for our state government and a lot of mistrust for the federal government generally. Right. I mean, and that's true. So yeah, to throw all government in one big bucket of mistrust isn't genuine at all.
Yeah.
So that was the first wave, was the TV and radio. We thought, hey, it's calming down. Maybe we're done. We learned that Greg Hughes had been hired as a spokesman. He was a really well-known politician back in the day He's been a lot less involved lately, but he's still kind of works with different clients and different things. And he took this up to be the spokesperson and like, oh, hey, now we actually have someone we can talk to about this, which is nice. He doesn't have any background in broadband. I think, you know, he just has talking points that he's been given and they're really easy to respond to. We then saw a flyer campaign go out and so we saw, and they're really nicely done. These are real full page, glossy, you know, graphics and stuff. And they went all over the place and we're just reading these and we're like, I mean, they could have called us to get some better data if they cared. Right.
Right.
You know, it's like $300 million of debt. I'm like, well, actually, it's more than that. But the debt isn't the problem if we're successfully paying for that debt, right? I'm like, you know, we debt finance things all the time. And, you know, it's like if you've got a, you know, a mortgage on a house, but you have a renter who's paying for the mortgage, you're like, this is a great investment, right? We have debt for these fiber networks and we have revenues from our customers to pay for these. And these cities are getting this asset built and paid for from voluntary subscriptions. Like that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, I don't know if that's like a bad misinformation that it's just bad data, but the other points they hit on are like, and you know, and they still haven't, you know, finished the network. And I'm like, yeah, actually we did like several years ago, all the original cities, they're done.
Right.
And then of all these like expansion cities, they're all done, but the two newest ones, which you mentioned Bountiful is brand new. And the one right before that was West Haven. And that one's almost done. So we're like, we have a really good track record when it comes to finishing our projects. And maybe not in the first 10 years, but, you know, again, that was, you know, some of the rough early years.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've been done for a long time, even with the new stuff. So like, that's just a lie. But yeah, again, they don't seem to care. They just, we want to spread negative sentiment out there. And the only thing we can really think of is there are other cities that are being left behind where they're bad. They have terrible broadband and they're looking for solutions. So I think they just want to try to dissuade some of these other cities from looking at Utopia as a solution. Our reputation's gone from bad to good. We make it really easy. You know, we're like, we've done it. We've done it over and over and over.
Yeah.
Approve this agreement, you know, in the city council meeting and we're off to the races, right? Like it's a pretty basic, easy process for cities. And so I think that's what the aim of this campaign is just to maybe stop our growth.
Yeah. Stop your growth and get in the way of other municipalities from looking at the model. You know, Utopia is not the only municipal provider, of course, and there's going to be BEAD money rolling out soon. So there's probably some anxiety about some of that funding going to more municipalities. But in terms of this campaign, have you all taken any kind of hit from this or has it just been a nuisance?
No, we watch very closely, right? Uh-huh. We got all of our take rate reports and stats and everything like that. It's like I can say we're always growing our take rate in all of our cities, and that hasn't changed. There's like I can point to like, oh, there's this one month where we took a dip of like 100, and it was probably like in most cases it's because we had like an apartment complex or condos or something, and they switched over from a individual unit contract to a bulk, and that counts differently, and so decreases our count but not actually decreases our revenue.
Yeah.
Or sometimes we might lose one of those, you know, bulk deal to Comcast, but other than like a single month anomaly here and there on a single city, every single city has maintained steady growth in take rate, not just number of subscriptions but in the, you know, percentage of customers, which effectively means that it's the best option compared to everything else in the market. People continue to move over to Utopia. That no amount of, you know, attack campaign or new offers from competitors has slowed this down. In fact, we just had a record year. So if there's ever a question of like, are we doing better and in more demand than all the other options out there? And it's like, maybe not so much back in 2004. But every single year, demand for fiber has grown and exceeded demand for any other possible service, right? Whether that was wireless, satellite, cable, Like, you know, we see a lot of noise. We see marketing. They even have door-to-door marketing out there trying to sell like Verizon home internet and T-Mobile home internet are available in our markets. So we've got these new 5G home internet solutions, Starlink obviously coming in, and, you know, significant upgrades and promotions from the cable and CenturyLink, or, you know, the Lumen brand of fiber to the home, even in some of our areas, right? Like, we've gotten overbuilt with fiber in some of our cities. And it's like, yeah, we still aren't losing customers. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well,
we're doing something right.
No wonder you're in the sights of lobbyists for the telecom industry then.
Yeah, this is an enormous threat to them, right?
Exactly. I mean,
the cities start realizing, you know, we don't have to put up with this garbage anymore. We could actually either do it ourselves or find partnerships like with Utopia to avoid the risk or the unknown and actually, you know, piggyback off of a successful track record. Like, that is a huge hit for any company that's, you know, dependent on their monopoly status in a city, right? Who's not willing to compete.
So let's end this conversation by really stressing them out and hearing what you guys are up to for the rest of 2024 in terms of what builds your focus on. And of course, the other big topic for 2024 into 2025 and beyond is the BEAD program, the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program. So anything you want to say about whether or not Utopia is planning to get involved in some BEAD grants?
Yeah. So on the first, like, our plans for the next couple of years are kind of to continue what we've been doing with additional city partnerships. Those could be either in Utah. We have, you know, a lot of cities that are, you know, they're all, we didn't really talk on this too much, but the idea that they're considered served. So they're like, we're not going to get any BEAD money here. We don't have any subsidy available, but, you know, you go ask them, like, so you're good then, right? And they're like, no, we're not good. We hate our broadband. We have terrible options. Yeah. You know, they don't even know what the term served and unserved means, right? Like, if you go talk to human beings who are not in our industry and say, do you have good internet at home? And they're like, no, it's terrible. And I keep going back and forth between CenturyLink and Comcast because I hate both of them. And, you know, then they tick me off. I switch and I'm like, it's two terrible options. And so communities are not served just because the FCC map says they are, right? Like, that's just this huge fallacy. We have this horrible broadband situation, and there is demand to be met beyond what those companies are capable of providing. So with that, there's a lot of territory for us to cover that isn't now or won't be covered in the future with BEAD or any sort of rural program.
Yeah.
And so we expect to get some of those cities to partner with us right here in Utah. We've had several cities outside of the state, different phases of RFPs and RFIs, or even just casual conversation, who are interested in pursuing this. So I would expect to see us grow outside of Utah with some of these partnerships. The obvious ones to us kind of seem regional. It'd be really easy for us to take on more cities, you know, in the Southwest. And so we have dialogue conversations going on with adjacent states, but we get questions from, you know, cities and state or entities outside of the state and even back east or wherever. And it's like, is there any reason Utopia couldn't partner with us? And we're like, no, like Idaho Falls and Bozeman Fiber, those are Yellowstone Fiber now. Sorry, my marketing folks are going to slap me if I call it Bozeman Fiber, but Yellowstone Fiber is not like, it's not like we're not driving between those two networks, right? Like it's its own independent entity up there. It might as well be in Florida or somewhere else, and it could be managed remotely, similar like we do with those networks in Idaho Falls and Bozeman. It could be anywhere. So Utopia is open to the idea. We're not like aggressive. You know, we're not a private company. So we're not like, I'm going to go quadruple our profits and expand and take over the world. But if there's a city that wants to find a solution and they're of like mind and want to do this in partnership and have kind of the same mentality and approaches us, and there's a partnership to be had, we're interested in doing it and hearing them out, seeing if there's a way to you know, have a mutually beneficial partnership, which is what how we've been growing in the past.
Okay, excellent. I could force you to stay here and talk to me for many more hours, but I will let you go now. Thank you so much for your time, Roger, and I'm looking forward to keeping up with all of the great work Utopia is doing. Thank you again, Roger, for joining me. Thank you as well to our producer, Pierre Landriau, for making this episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Light Reading Podcast for more episodes of The Divide, as well as interviews and insights from the Light Reading team. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.